We were talking about RoboCop.
Yes, we were.
Part man, part machine.
Part machine.
All cop.
All cop.
Yeah. Alex J. Murphy was the volunteer for the RoboCop program by way of getting his head blown off.
Yeah, I was going to say, was he a volunteer?
What was it? Clarence Boddicker. The greatest, like, bad guy in any, like...
Is that... Red from
if you guys have not seen RoboCop, you're missing out. Okay, my favorite part about RoboCop, well, not my favorite part, but what one of the things I enjoy a lot about RoboCop is that it takes place in the future, and I think the future is like 1998.
Yeah. My dilemma was, first of all, I don't know if he was.
I'm sorry, there's no dilemma in RoboCop.
There is.
Okay.
I don't know if this is a moral dilemma or if this is just a cinematic dilemma I'm personally having.
Sure.
But in the plot, best case scenario, this gentleman, the officer,
Alex J. Murphy,
God bless him,
RoboCop,
he cleans up all the crime in Detroit.
Yeah.
Then what? What is RoboCop to do after that?
Yeah, well, we talked about this. Either there's a retirement plan and party with cake.
Do they just recycle them?
He goes to recycling.
A retirement recycling plan?
Yeah, or he moves on to another city.
Right, like
or
LA
maybe he starts working in rural parts of Michigan.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, it gets fucked up. Yeah. The city's spilled over.
Yeah, I mean, you think the city's bad, head out to the rural parts of Michigan.
Grand Rapids is pretty nice.
Well, this time of year as well.
But, they could be a little bit more straightened out.
I think we could... I think we could learn a couple lessons for RoboCop.
Fine-tune it out there, the Gerald Ford Museum.
The big question that Pat had, of course, at the start of this podcast was, how did they have enough content for three movies? And
my argument
to this is, number one, there's only two movies, because the third one doesn't...
It's an abomination.
It is an abomination. he has a jetpack, and there's like a...
Completely unbelievable.
Yeah, totally unrealistic. To episode 4 of season 3. Is it five?
I don't know.
It is? Maybe it is 5. Yeah. We do this every time we start a season because I can't keep track.
We've been on a couple season 3s.
Yeah, but I mean, if this is... We have been on... this is version 2.
I think if they don't realize by this time there isn't, like, seasons.
Yeah, we don't really, We just every time we take a break, we come back to a new season.
Yeah, we back, baby.
Yeah, but we're back. So that means, though, even so, that would be like 5 weeks of recording
in
a row.
Right? And you're like, hey, do you want to take a... You were like, hey, I know you had family in town.
You did
have
family in town.
You want to take a week off? And I was like, hell no, dude.
You did. I was proud of you, man. I was ready to rock. Yeah.
I'm sweating a lot, but I did it. And I think it's a little bit better.
Yeah, we're improving already. Always improving. Always getting better.
Yeah. Always getting better.
So
I haven't seen you all the week, though, Jeff. And I haven't even hugged you yet.
No, I know. Not even a little bit.
This whole episode, I want everybody to know, I haven't hugged Jeff all week.
We have not embraced, not even once.
Not even like a handshake. Did we even handshake here?
We could fix that.
Just to mitigate the
feelings.
That
is a firm handshake.
Dude, good job.
Yeah.
Somebody told me I got one of the greatest compliments I've gotten in my adult life recently, Jeff.
Okay.
Somebody said I had mitts. I was talking to somebody on Zoom, and I did. I went like this.
Yeah.
And they're like, God damn, Pat, your hand's almost as big as your chest.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, is that not...
Okay. Is that not okay?
You're like, I'm sorry.
You immediately apologize. Try and make your hands look smaller.
That's me. Like that is to a T. That is how I've been my whole life. Is high school gym coaches going like, football practice this weekend? And I'm like, I don't do that. I'm scared. So
it's so funny, dude. That's like, I'm not, obviously, for those that know me and those that can see me on film, I'm not a particularly large person, but I do have big hands.
You surprise everyone when you tell them that your normal shirt size is an extra large.
It is an extra large.
That's surprising because that's kind of mine too.
Yeah, it's an extra large.
I think that's what this is.
But I have bigger hands. I have mitts for hands, and it's just the way that I was made. Last podcast, which you guys are like in the midst of listening to right now, is all about position, and so of course what follows position, but
submission. Baby.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pat, what's your favorite submission? Maybe we should retry.
Okay.
For our podcast listeners that don't understand Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, the ground fighting arts. Mm-hmm. What is a submission?
A submission is basically the manipulation of limbs and or arteries.
Yeah.
Essentially, you're choosing whether or which way their arms go and which way their blood goes.
Right.
That is, so like, do you have your, one of the ones that I like to go to a lot is a rear naked choke. You've probably seen it a lot of times.
You've probably seen it wrong.
Right. You've seen it wrong plenty of times, but it's a lot of times where you see, and this is this is one of my favorite things about the rear naked choke, is because there's so many elements happening that people have to choose to fight. I like giving people a lot of problems to have, but you only have one real focus.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think I like a rear naked choke or a belly down arm bar, which, again, is the arm.
Hyperextended.
Hyperextended, right? Usually at the elbow. The elbow's supposed to be around the hips. And
yep.
I like that because the belly down is just how I always end up because I don't usually get
And if
the
you can't beat
first.
Them, join them, right?
Right.
I mean, it's like we already ended up here. Okay. I guess this is a belly down arm lock now.
But those are two that I like to go to, I think, more often than not. How about you, Jeff?
Well, I mean, I have a variety that I really enjoy. The rear naked choke is among my favorites as well.
Yeah.
It's one of the first submissions that you learn in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because they want to show you immediately, like, where is the ideal place for you to be? And that, when we're talking about position, of course, being on someone's back is the greatest of all. I mean, you can make the argument that you prefer the mount or side control, but being on someone's back is considered the ultimate in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because you can't hit me from there.
Yeah.
I'm on your back. And then there's a variety of things that occur after that. And there's a variety of submissions that can occur from that position, too, depending on whether you're wearing a gi or not. But the rear naked choke in no gi, and like from ADCC perspective, like it's the highest percentage submission that between that and heel hooks.
Yeah.
Like they're the two top, like nothing else comes close.
There's a lot of times where ones that not that they come too easy, but I feel like are kind of cheating sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so I always feel like a head and arm triangle, like whenever I do that, I feel like being a bigger guy is kind of just using a side. And this is a conflict that I've dealt with a long time of my jiu-jitsu.
Your self-confidence.
it's my body issues.
your body issues.
But like feeling like I'm not being a bully, but like kind of just, it's easy. Like I can just squish your neck if I lay on your neck.
Right.
You know what
I
mean? But I like a little bit more position over submission now.
Sure.
Instead of just a squeeze and
smother. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. I think we're gonna dive into some of this stuff today, guys, about like, you know, the appropriateness of submissions and so forth. But you know, I going back, I would say if there was a favorite submission of mine, it would probably be defaulting to what I'm most known for, which would be like triangle chokes.
Yeah, those are pretty. You put the angle in triangle.
I put the angle in triangle.
Sure.
I love triangle chokes, and it's one of those submissions that I feel confident that I can hit from any position, whether I'm in like whether I start in, you know, a closed guard scenario or I'm in top side control, I could see the opportunity for triangle chokes everywhere.
Right.
I can hit them from your back. I can hit them from mount.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, an inverted triangle is real fun.
Inverted
too.
Triangles are cool. Like, I like the triangle choke. Is it my favorite submission? It's pretty close. It probably would have to be, I would say, just by default.
I have a question, maybe a little bit of clarity since we're on the subject, and this isn't the theme. What's the difference, Jeff, between a crank and a submission?
So and we're gonna like, and we might as well just start like broaching into this, like,
okay,
sort
yeah.
of like the issues that we run into with submissions is that, first and foremost, is that we as jiu-jitsu practitioners, from as many of our listeners are, is that we sort of take it for granted, you know, that we've got these, you know, these things that we can do to somebody else, and we can make them tap and say, "I quit."
Yeah,
that's why we call it a submission. You submit you know, the impending doom or the impending injury that's about to occur.
You basically you choose life over pride.
You do, and I think that's a smart move. But one of the things that we take for granted about this is that the true function of these positions are and or can be lethal. They can be catastrophically, you know, they can be rendered in a manner that is catastrophic to your health for the rest of your life. Like snapping an arm like that in an arm lock, like a true arm lock, and really snapping someone's arm like that, or a heel hook where you're tearing at someone's knee. You could make it so that they don't walk properly ever again.
Yeah, that's the thing about, like, when we were talking about, I believe it was on the last episode, about it being the gentle art.
Right.
Like, saying, like, I don't understand how the things that I'm doing, because I'm not being gentle.
Right.
But it's the choice. And again, if you haven't watched the last episode, we explain a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
But I always wonder about, like, is how often would you say a break is needed in those situations?
I mean, I would say very rarely.
Because it's like, it seems like we had that tactical question on the last show too.
Sure, right.
Like that would be a situation where you wouldn't just let go when they tap.
Yeah,
would probably break their arm to disarm them.
Yeah, right. And we dove a little bit, like Josh, who asked that question, who is somebody that we train with, we kind of went a little bit deeper in that the other day. And one of the things that we talked about was just that it is important for us to recognize that these things are designed to incapacitate somebody so that they can no longer cause harm to you.
Right.
And like when you train, you tend to fight the way you train. So like it's, you have to be careful that like when you're in a scenario like that where you definitely need to stop somebody, if that means break their arm, you have to break their arm, and you're like, oh, but I'm worried that I'm going to hurt them.
Yeah.
Or they like tap it, like they're like, let go. And you do, because you train that way to let go every time.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah.
No. In those scenarios, you just do it and be done with it. Snap it.
Yeah. I think I would be
a done deal.
Most comfortable in a real life scenario, like breaking someone's limb, it would be a Kimura. I would feel like because I, you know, like then you're taking that whole shoulder, everything's out.
Gone. Well, I've got stories for you then. So but to answer your question about the difference between a crank and a choke, for instance, in our world, you know, first and foremost, we really are like one of the things that we have to think about is when we're talking about chokes, and I tap, okay, you don't have to let go.
Right. Okay. Yeah, you're right. So yeah, it's not on the board. It's technically not on the board.
And I mean, if there was like, I mean, my life is now in your hands. We've seen people pass out, go out. Like it does not take long before the blood supply to your brain shuts off and you go out, you pass out. And it's only several seconds after that that brain damage starts to occur. And it's only several seconds after that that you're dead.
Huh. Jesus.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of trust involved in what we do, but don't forget this, guys, that the things that you're learning how to do are very, very dangerous to other people.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. So, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No. So like, you know, so we're like, we take all those things seriously in a training environment. And when we're like, when we talk about neck cranks, for instance, because they're illegal in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and they're illegal for obvious reasons. And that is when you crank someone's neck, like you can crank their neck.
Yeah.
If you were in a self-defense scenario and you had to crank someone's neck, fuck them. But
yeah.
But know that like when you do that, the damage is done. Like you're not going to be able to kindly crank someone's neck. You're going to crank their neck and something's going to pop or break or snap, and that's it.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah, it's over.
So we just don't do that shit.
I can see that. Yeah.
You know, so you know, spinal manipulation and neck cranks and small joint manipulation, those types of things. We don't do those things. And some of it is because those things aren't effective. Like small joint manipulation, if you grab my fingers and break them, it's going to hurt, and I'm going to be really upset that you broke my fingers, but I'm not going to stop beating the shit out of you for it.
Yeah.
So you can grab my fingers if you want, but now you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is like and also it's the possibility of it coming back, because like I think that's what I was thinking. What I was thinking was the difference between just. Like a wrist lock. A wrist lock is a submission.
It is a submission.
But it is a not, I wouldn't even say frowned upon. It's a judged submission.
It's judged.
It's a judged submission.
Right. And I think it's mostly frowned upon by people that get caught in wrist locks.
Yeah. A lot of times. I was a poo-pooer of the wrist lock. Now I'm a proprietor of the wrist lock.
Oh, the games we play, Pat.
But I wonder, like, because the difference between like a crank and like a submission is like, yeah, you can crank on someone's face.
Oh, sure.
If they don't tap, like it doesn't mean they're not tapping to your submission. It means that they're picturing doing this to you in about 4 minutes.
That's right.
Because they're like, oh, yeah, that's good. That's good. You want to go again?
Good? Yeah, right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, that's, that it, it, I think of it, a crank being, if somebody taps to it, it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to work in a real life scenario.
Right.
That
and
means that
this is a very good, like, this is a very good way to introduce that. Yeah. It's a very good point, and I'm glad you clarified that, because it's true to say that, like, when we start in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and we have not a whole lot of control over our own bodies,
yeah,
we cause a lot of physical, like, pain to our partners, not intentionally, but
right,
but like things like digging your elbows into their thighs, or like, or grinding away at their face,
dick,
like
dick moves,
yeah quote unquote dick moves, yeah. Right, and we don't do it intentionally, but we do it because we don't understand, like, what we think we're doing the move correctly.
We think we're doing jiu-jitsu,
right?
Like, is this part
right.
of a pass where I
right.
dig my elbows into your
yeah,
thighs,
yeah,
and you're like,
yeah,
okay, I'll do it to you, and we'll ask if it's jiu-jitsu.
Right. The problem with it is that over time, as you become a better practitioner, is that, first of all, a lot of that stuff just doesn't bug you the way that it used to. Mm-hmm. You become sort of desensitized to it.
Okay, yeah.
And so, because you're so used to, like, things like elbows hitting you and people smashing you and being
knee,
in these, like, yeah,
the eye,
getting,
yeah,
yeah, getting kneed and things like that. Because, and I don't want to paint like a, it's not that violent.
Not a knee, like, not, we're not Jorge Masvidal or anything
we're
that,
not,
but it's like somebody goes to slide into side control and
they're,
it always happens there, and I always protect my temple.
Cause right, because there's a knee coming up the other side.
Because I know
right?
it's going to happen. And they go, oh, sorry. And then you're like, it's... I know it wasn't intentional. It's like, it happens.
Things happen
scrambles.
All the time. Right. Scrambles happen. You're wrestling with other people, and so, like, shit goes bad.
Right.
It does happen. But you recognize that, like, as a technique to get somebody to quit, like, over time, or with people with experience, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It just doesn't change.
Yeah.
And so, to your point, you're right. When you're in an actual fight, and for those that for those of our listeners that have never been in an actual altercation, or even a mixed martial arts fight for that matter, is it's funny that you don't really feel like pain.
Yeah.
You don't, because
your
adrenaline's way up, your blood's way up, and so you get hit and you recognize that you got hit. You'll especially recognize it if you get your bell rung.
Yeah.
But
dude, that's crazy. I've experienced a bell ringing before.
Sure, so have I.
And it's that.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Guys, if you've never had your bell rung, I don't recommend you do it.
It's weird.
But a gong actually goes off in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
Bong.
And like, seeing stars, I've never, like, it's like weird. It's like,
yeah.
It's kind of like
right.
this bubbles.
Yeah.
Of, yeah.
It's pretty intense. But
hard to explain, apparently.
Yeah, hard to explain. Don't recommend doing it.
That truly said by two people that have had their bell rung. It's kind of like bubbles or like stars, or it's like bong.
It's actually a lot of fun. Yeah. But all the other things happen, like get punched in the eye, or you get punched in the nose, or hit in the, you know, you don't really feel it. You know that you've taken damage, and your body, like, if you take enough damage, you're going to stop being effective as a fighter. That's kind of the point of it. But you don't feel it.
Oh,
that hurt, and I'm, you know,
you're not like, ow.
It doesn't work like that. So when you're in a grappling art like that, and people are grinding away, all it's really doing is making you angry.
Right.
So, and now you're like, now I'm gonna take it out on you.
And it's weird, because I've seen it past recently a couple different times now in, like, professional mixed martial arts fights where people are tapping to cranks.
Sure.
Like, and given it, one of them was for it was a Valentina Shevchenko against Alexa Grasso recently.
Okay.
And the crank was, so she was in the rear naked position, she had her arm basically over the whole bottom half
jaw.
Of her jaw,
yeah,
and it looked like she was wearing a little white bandana
right
when she let go. So, like, it makes sense, like, the rest of her face was red.
Sure, her jaw was gonna break
it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it doesn't mean that you can't, but you need to be prepared to break a jaw. And also, and if it's a street fight scenario, the real life submission would help more, because this person is going to react more.
Well,
they're going to have time to react more if
they
think you're going to break. Either way, they think you're trying to kill them.
Sure.
But the more effective way would be to get their
it would
chin
be.
Up.
It would
know?
Be. And there's, and you know, because one of the things too that, and I think is fair, is that when you're an athlete, and I know because we've both experienced this, like in live roles and so forth, where you have this moment where you decide whether or not you're going to tap or not.
Yeah.
Because you could hold out. But then, but what you're thinking about is, like, if I don't tap and this goes bad, this is going to affect my family. It's going to affect my work. It's going to affect, and I'm going to be out of jiu-jitsu for, you know, and it's all your ego that tells that. And so, like, I actually applaud you know, fighters, professional fighters who get into a scenario that they know, like, if I hold out any longer, does that mean she can fight with a broken jaw? Yeah, she can.
Yeah. Will they let her?
But will they let her, number one? Yeah, and was it worth it then after that? No, not really. So just tap. Like, you got yourself in this bad spot. It happens. Like, then it's back to the gym, right? But you're right. And, like, even in a self-defense scenario, and this is one of the things that you had brought up earlier, like, and I said we're going to get into that, is that and we've seen people, we've seen people, guys, that have gotten limbs broken mm-hmm. and continue to fight.
Yeah.
And there's I guarantee you there's plenty of people out there that
Jamal Hill, the most recent light heavyweight champion, was fighting, I believe it was Paul, God damn it, I can't remember his name, Paul Craig. And he was in an armbar scenario.
Yeah.
His arm was dislocated right at the,
joint. Yeah.
Right at the joint. And the ref was like, stop. And he's like, why? And his arm's like flopping around. He's just like, it's done. Yeah, arm's
good
off.
On the ref, right?
It's done. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yes, I've seen that plenty of times.
Yeah, they're gonna fight through it. They're gonna go ahead and fight anyway. I couldn't speak to like people that are like drugged on something that are freaking out and so forth. But there are plenty of tales of people that get hit with baseball bats, that get like they get jumped, they get shot, they get stabbed, mm-hmm. and they don't stop.
Yeah.
But one thing, guys, that will stop everybody, and that is if you cut the blood supply off to their brain, they're going out. And it doesn't matter how big they are. It doesn't matter how tough they are. They can't help it. It
doesn't matter how many bath salts they're on.
That's right. They could be on a ton of bath salts.
But you do got to get to their back. That's going to be the challenge.
That is going
to
be the challenge. Yeah, well, you choke them, right? Yeah. But you can choke them. You don't have to go to their back, though. You can do something other than a rear naked choke. You can choke people. You can use the gi chokes on T-shirts, sweatshirts, button-up shirts. It still works. Those are things that like you guys can do at a guarantee that if you get the choke and cut off their blood supply, they're going out.
Yeah.
Now, here's the funny thing. When we talk about submissions, and every one of you that trains has your favorite sub, like either your favorite one to do or your favorite one to watch or your favorite one, you know, to explore and think about. But there are definitely a whole host of submissions that are frowned upon in one form or another. And I don't mean illegal ones. So I'm not talking about neck cranks.
Ones where you're like, God damn.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not talking about those, but wrist locks is a great example.
Yeah, wrist lock is that's my go-to frowned upon.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, leg locks in general are pretty.
Oh, and the calf slicer. Oh, Jeff,
slicers.
I have just the calf slicer.
Oh, just the calf.
Nothing else. I want your calf to be sliced.
Yes.
And but this is the thing, Jeff. I before every roll, and this is not me. I'm not showboating. I'm not trying to talk shit. I go. I'm going to try to calf slice you. Legitimately, that's the only way I feel confident in trying to complete a calf slicer is not tricking you into it.
Right.
And not doing anything else. It's also like saying, because also if you go, hey, my knee's really shitty or my calf is, it's got.
But only in no gi, though, too, by the way, right? Not the gi.
Right.
Because you can't do calf
slicers.
Right.
I don't do that. No, calf slicer for sure, and wrist locks are two that I do that probably I would be judged heavily for.
Yeah, so I think that, that dives into like leg locks. I think leg locks in general are pretty well like, you know, you're a filthy leg locker.
Yeah, everybody always like that. It's always that. It's always judgment on the from waist up.
What, you're not good enough to attack my upper body?
Yeah, come on, my fucking brain's up here, pussy. And I wonder if that has something to do with. It, not directly, but in maybe indirectly, somebody going like, if this was a real fight, I'd just punch you right now, or something like that.
Sure.
Or not that we're necessarily thinking that in the moment, but some subconscious part of our brain's like, this wouldn't work in real life.
Yeah.
But it does.
It would. Yeah, it would 100%.
Keep turning this, and then you wouldn't be able to stand anymore.
No, there's no, like, right. You're done. Right. Yeah. That I'm blowing that knee out.
You were a big fan of the Ashigarami.
Ashigarami, that's right. Yeah.
What is your particular favorite? Inside, outside?
It's cross inside Ashigarami.
Cross inside.
Yeah, that's my favorite position.
And what is your go-to dastardly move from there?
It'll be so depending on who I'm rolling with, and whether I'm in the gi or not. So when I'm in the gi, so there's no like even at black belt level in the gi, there's no heel hooks allowed. But there are a couple of things that you can do from that position. I can do straight ankle lock on the other leg. So on the secondary leg, there's a straight ankle lock, and it's a nasty one. Mm-hmm. And also, I can come up, I can bring that knee back across in the cross ashi that or the cross inside ashi that turns into a sweep, which is really nice.
Oh yeah, that happens a lot.
So I do like that. But heel hooks for sure in no-gi. Like there's you have, because when you're for those that aren't familiar with this position, it's just ashigarami just means leg entanglement. So like but on the inside, across inside ashigarami, I have access to both of your legs.
Yeah.
So the one that's closest to me is my primary leg. The one that's further away is the secondary leg. And so, like, usually it's heel hooks and no-gi. Like, there's a lot of opportunity for heel hooks there.
I can see those being frowned upon a lot of times just because of how frustrating that can be to have both your legs tied up and you're looking at...
Sure.
You're watching the submission happen.
Happen, right? Yeah. And there's nothing really that you can do to stop it, yeah. Right?
Most of the other ones, there's some form of... there's some form of disconnection from it. Like, the armbar, you're away from me.
Yeah.
Rear naked, I can't even see you. What's happening,
sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
But this one, you're like, what are you doing? Ow! Stop! Cut it up!
You know, one of the things too, though, that I find is interesting is that there are a lot of people like yourself that feel bad about certain submissions that you were potentially good at.
Yeah.
You know, or have a lot of control over, whether it's because of your size or because, or maybe it's just one that you're really good at, and then you start to feel bad about it.
Yeah.
You shouldn't feel bad about it.
You don't think so?
Not at all. Not even a little bit.
I feel like I have not. Towards me, but I feel like I have experienced you openly judging a head and arm triangle before.
From?
I think you said that you don't prefer, or you don't
I don't prefer head and arm triangles.
Like, you're like, I think I asked you a question about it, and you're like, I don't really like it. I think that was more, maybe at the time, I thought maybe you were, it was judgment, but maybe you were warning me like, hey, I'm not super, I don't like these a lot, so
yeah.
I don't do it a lot, but here's how you can do it.
So here's the funny thing about head and arm like chokes, because there's a variety of them, right? There's a whole bunch of them that you can set up, and I think they're perfectly legitimate submissions, don't get me wrong. I personally don't like to do them. I think they take a lot of energy that I don't want to use, and I could set it up for something else. That's just my preference.
Yeah.
It's not like a criticism of you guys that like head and arm chokes.
Like I said, I think at the time I was just like, I asked you a question, and you were probably warning me, I'm not very familiar, or not familiar, but I'm not very... it's not one of my faves.
I'm not a huge advocate, and because they're also easy to defend.
Yeah.
But when you defend them, they also turn into cranks, because when you squeeze like that, like, you know, and I,
okay,
like, and then I start getting like, then I'm like, this just hurts my shoulder, right? Or this just hurts my, like, and
or jaw again. It's a lot
could
of
be a
jaw
right. Could be jaw manipulation. Could be something else that goes bad in there. And so for me, like, it's just my preference for like cleaner. You know, cleaner submissions is just, and again, if you're really good at head and arm chokes, like, good on you. Like, then that's your, you know, if that's your bread and butter, go for it. Like, I'm down, but.
It's actually, you just reminded me of another one that I've really fallen in love with recently is the Von Flute.
Yeah, you like the Von Flute choke.
I like that because I like giving the person the false confidence of the.
The headlock,
guillotine.
Yeah, the headlock.
Oh,
and
no, you got me. Uh-oh.
Which, then, by the way, isn't a guillotine. It's a headlock,
yeah, it's
right?
Just,
because
yeah.
they think they're cranking on your neck for that. But you're on top side control.
And yeah, and then you just boop, and drop, you pop up, walk around their guard, and just
drop
boop.
Your shoulder on them.
And it's like, and they're like, I can always feel the...
Yeah, this is
like the sigh of
so
like,
disappointing.
That's
so
my
disappointing.
Favorite. I forgot. I can't. I'm so glad you reminded me, because like I took a week off and I had a family in. And
yeah, you did have family.
Completely forgot that I like jujitsu.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. I'm just here in the nick of time then.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now,
look, now I'm making you like bloodthirsty, and you're like sweating over here, and you're like,
I haven't got one of those in a while.
I've got to get some chokes going on here.
Jeff, let me see your wrist.
It's pretty crazy when you guys think about, like, when you reach blue belt level in jujitsu, which is a huge milestone. It's your first rank outside of white belt. It is very hard earned. But when you get to blue belt, if you stop and really just, like, if you sat and wrote down all the submissions, you know, it's a fucking lot.
Yeah, it's. I think when people go, like, what's your go-to? I'm like, I don't know. I don't really, whatever I get to. What can I get to, and what are my options?
Yeah.
But I like a Kimura. Kimura's easy.
You like a Kimura?
Okay, yeah. Not easy. Like, I don't mean that demeaning, but I mean it's like, it's just, the arm is, like, you can kind of get that from anywhere.
You can get it from a lot of places.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It sucks, or it's a sweep.
Like, yeah, you can sweep, right. Right. We call it the Kimura trap, because it can either go to a sweep or go to a submission, but it definitely takes your, you know, half of your body out of the game if you get caught in one. My favorite submission to counter of all time, okay, is when people try, when I'm in the closed guard and my back's on the ground and somebody tries to cross collar choke me from the top. It's my favorite submission attempt.
Man, and now listen. I've tried that so many times.
Now I know, and listen. This is the funniest thing about it is that you like there. It is absolutely possible for somebody that's on in the top guard position to choke somebody with a cross collar choke from that position. I've seen it happen.
Okay.
Okay. The problem with it is that if you try that shit on me, like I will I will throw up my favorite most embarrassing submission of all time, and that is the double arm lock.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna hit you with both arms. You'll quit jujitsu.
Like,
yeah, yeah. I'm like, which arm was it that you tapped to? Yeah. You don't know. And you'll quit jujitsu. And now
everybody
I'm
will laugh at you.
Everybody will laugh at you. And now I'm down another student. So don't try and cross
don't
college.
Do that to us.
Yeah, don't
we
try and cross college.
As many training partners as possible.
Yeah.
Please.
Exactly. Speaking of training partners, and in need for jujitsu, what's happening in the world of jujitsu today, Pat? The fight between Elon Musk.
Oh yeah. And Elon Musk and what's the other? Zuckerberg.
And Zuckerberg.
Yeah. So you've trained with both of them.
I've trained.
So that last week. See you last week for photo evidence.
You know, the only thing that I'll say about this is that I think it's interesting to me that, again, I don't give a shit, by the way, who wins that fight.
Right.
I have no interest in it whatsoever.
It seems even like too much of a phony thing to be even a distraction.
Right.
Do you know
and,
what I mean?
And if it happens, it happens. But I mean, I don't know that it's like a sincere.
I will not watch it.
I probably won't watch it. I mean, I'll probably be forced to watch it because we'll probably comment on it on the podcast at some point. But nonetheless.
Yeah, I'll see the reactions to it. I won't watch it live. Let me say that.
I won't watch it live. It's not going to be. No, it's certainly not a pay-per-view thing.
I'm definitely not going to pay for
it. But I think it's interesting that, you know, like, again, that jiu-jitsu is so accessible that it's now part of, like, it's part of our culture now.
Yeah, that the fact that it's, I love that it has been news a couple times. This happened with Bane. What's his name? Tom Hardy.
Yeah, Tom Hardy.
I call Dan Hardy. Different guy. Actual fighter. Well, actually, so was Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I just love the fact that all these people are like, oh, he went in under a false name. He went in. Like, I don't think they even have to do that. Even if there's a guy named Mark Zuckerberg on the list at a jiu-jitsu competition.
Yeah.
Now that it's been in the news, people would know. But
sure.
Those first couple ones, like, I think you can kind of just go like, are you fucking Mark Zuckerberg?
Yeah.
And like, come back. Okay. That's probably how he won most of his matches, was like people going like, are you really fucking Mark Zuckerberg?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Bane? trying to cross college Bane. Yeah. I double arm lock you. You know? But the fact that Al Bundy, Keanu Reeves.
Al Bundy.
He's a black belt. I should know
his name's
his real name.
Ed O'Neill.
Ed O'Neill. Sorry, sir. Sorry, Mr. Bundy, sir. But all these guys that it's like it's news stories now, like that they're training jiu-jitsu and that it's becoming more popular. For that reason, I do support this fight. But other than that, watching two untrained, for the most part, people.
Well, new to jiu-jitsu, let's say.
Even just to jiu-jitsu, going into an MMA fight like that.
Is this supposed to be an MMA fight?
I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was just supposed to be a jiu-jitsu fight.
Maybe it got downgraded because I believe this is maybe you can. Double check the news on this. I believe Elon Musk's mother told him he couldn't do it.
That's awesome.
The good thing, though, the good thing about this is, best case scenario, we get a fight between two people who are somewhat equally trained and possibly see a billionaire's arm broken on live television.
But it could be,
or streaming or whatever. Or
is a billionaire's arm different than an average person's arm?
We're about to find out. Ultimately, I don't think anybody's going to actually get hurt.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And I don't think anybody's mom has to be worried about. It's probably going to be a minute and a half of crazy, frantic swinging, a little bit of catching your breath on the floor, and then it'll probably be somebody doesn't come out in the second round. You know what I mean? Realistically, but I just feel like this is a story where like this is where I don't think anyone's gonna get hurt.
Yeah.
But even if they do, you know, it's because they didn't tap because of their ego.
Yeah, I think it would be better. I think it would be better as a jiu-jitsu fight.
Yeah, I think so too.
I just think it would
because there is he still was Zuckerberg still at white belt.
Yeah.
And if Elon Musk starts training now...
He has been training. He does train.
He has been?
I think so. If I understand this correctly, he does train.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that was just like a publicity thing.
Could be. Could have been a publicity thing. I don't know. I've never actually seen him train. I have no idea.
But there's definitely a lot... Like, this is... As far as distractions, this is something that is positive for jiu-jitsu because it's getting... Because that's how Zuckerberg got... That's how the story kind of started. They saw him competing.
Yeah.
Elon Musk talked shit. He said, well, put your fucking asshole where your mouth is. And let's fucking roll, dude.
Yeah.
And Dana White said, I'm in.
Yeah.
And which is weird. But so you're right. That could be on Fight Pass. Weird.
Yeah, it could be on Fight Pass. That'd be cool.
So speaking of the world of jiu-jitsu and Fight Pass and jiu-jitsu competitions, did you hear that George St. Pierre will be facing Damian Maia?
I did.
In a grappling competition coming up.
Yes. So if you guys have not heard this, this is thrilling.
Yeah. I am genuinely...
I'm super stoked for it.
Super excited.
Who do you like for it?
Damian Maia?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like... I don't know, man.
It's too tough.
You can't ever... So you can't ever bet against George St. Pierre.
Right.
Especially after a long hiatus, because he's never truly hiating.
No, if you've seen him, he's totally like exactly the same as
he's still diving into ice buckets. He's still...
He hasn't aged any in like 20 years.
Exercises like crazy. Like he has a bunch of what their weights that he does. He does a lot of aqua therapy and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And looks just as fit as he ever has. Looks just as in shape. Still training with people.
Yeah.
I honestly would say I would bet on Damian Maia just because he has been a more active fighter as of recently.
Sure.
But I don't think I'll actually put money on
him. I wouldn't either.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you on this one. But it's going to be if it does make its way through, which I think it will.
Yeah.
I think it's a legitimate I think it's very exciting to see this. Not least of which is like bringing George St. Pierre back to some sort of competitive sport.
Yeah, I love him being in the grappling circuit.
Yeah, like, it's right, exactly. I think it's perfect, and it's great for jiu-jitsu. I think it'll be really interesting to see these guys fight. So I'm looking forward to that. Do you have a date on that? Do we have a date?
I don't believe so.
I don't think we have a date on that.
I can look that up real quick. I know it was just announced.
But speaking of dates, August, what is it, August 5th that's coming up that we've got the Jake Paul.
Oh, yeah, Nate Diaz fight. Yeah.
Nate Diaz fight. And who do you like for that fight? Because this is a straight boxing match, by the way. But Nate Diaz being one of my favorite fighters and a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt.
Not having that.
And not being a boxer. He's never boxed before. So he's coming. I mean, well, yeah.
He's
never professionally boxed
before. Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. I know what you're talking about.
But he's coming in to fight Jake Paul, who, by the way, has gotten a lot more like credentialed since that time period where everybody's like, this guy's a loudmouth, dickhead, you know.
So I feel like there's a, this is my problem with any of the Jake Paul fights. Wow,
is that they all suck?
I can't find the date on that.
That's okay. Sorry. We'll get it squared away. Because we definitely, not to keep flopping back and forth. We definitely want everybody to see the.
Yeah, that's a legitimate for real.
St. Pierre.
So that's my thing. That's a legitimate
fight
that I think is going to be very competitive and entertaining.
It's going to be very good.
I think that's going to be 10 times more entertaining than the Nate Diaz Jake Paul fight.
Okay, and that's your beef with it.
So that my problem is that every Jake Paul fight that I have seen the highlights of, because I haven't really actually watched them fully.
Sure.
Has been like it's been like the ends, the endings that I've seen have felt like maybe predetermined.
Oh, you think there's some... Okay, I got you.
Once he beat Anderson Silva in a boxing match...
Yeah.
I don't understand all the fundamentals of boxing and the difference truly. I know that the weight size or the glove size plays a factor
in
some of the MMA fighters' power, but also the possibility of performance-enhancing drugs and knowing that Nate Diaz is a 100% clean fighter. Even if he had the opportunity, I don't think he would juice.
Right.
And with the possibility of Jake Paul like probably using some kind of... I don't understand the fundamentals of it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like truly of boxing.
Yeah.
Of the differences. Like he's not able to use a lot of his skill set. So... All of those factors are all the things that I'm thinking of, but I think it's all a distraction because I don't... What it comes down to, Jeff, is do you think that Nate Diaz would work a fight? Would he say, "Oh yeah, it's the seventh. I'll take it." You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that he would do that.
I don't think he would either.
And not just like, I don't think that, like, even if they approached him, maybe he would say, like, "Yeah, I'll do that," and then won't. So if of all of the Jake Paul fights that I've heard of and I've seen, even with the one with Anderson Silva, who is one of my all-time favorite fighters of all time, sure. I was not compelled at all because I don't want to see Anderson Silva lose to Jake Paul.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened.
Right, of course.
But I don't think that Anderson Silva could lose to Jake Paul.
Well, so...
So that's my dilemma, Jake.
Yeah, so I mean, like, it is, I think... For our listeners, boxing is an entirely different discipline.
Right.
And I have experience with this because there was a time where I was thinking about doing Golden Gloves, like boxing. Okay. And
he's got those mitts, that's why.
Yeah. So and the funny thing is that, like, boxing, boxers are fucking tough, dude.
Right.
Like, they could take a beating. I think some of the best shape I'd ever been in my entire life is getting ready for boxing matches. Mm-hmm. Like, it's incredibly, like, tough, like, conditioning. And these guys can really take a beating. And they can really deliver a beating as well from, like, punches, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, if you take somebody that is a boxer and you throw them on their back, it's like, it's a whole nother world, right? Like, there's no response at all.
Yeah.
You know, because it can't punch you. The way that
they can't generate that power. Yeah, exactly. They don't have. Yeah. There's no options for them from there.
Yeah. And so, like, when we talk about these fights, I find it interesting. Like, all of them are under the terms in which Jake Paul sets them.
Right.
And I think really these guys that are retired or older or haven't fought in a while, they're doing it because it makes them a lot of money.
Yeah. And they're willing to even.
They're willing to fight.
And they're willing. Yeah, they're willing to fight. They're probably not putting a ton into it.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
Some of these guys, definitely not. But
yeah, I don't know. Like, when I see Ben Askren get knocked out by Jake Paul, I go, yeah, that could happen.
Right, totally.
I go, yeah. Ben Askren is an incredible grappler. I've never been impressed with his striking. And sure. I honestly, with all due respect to Ben Askren and every other fighter in every fighting organization, I would say that to his face. And he would probably choke the shit out of me.
Right, right, right.
But and I would be like,
whoop. You'd be like, see, you didn't hit me.
Miss me, Ben. But, like, there's other fighters like Tyron Woodley, and there's other ones that I've seen that he's been dealt with by Jake Paul. And I'm like, I don't know what factors played in here.
Sure.
I don't know. Did he not take him seriously? Is Jake Paul better of a striker than Tyron Woodley?
Well, there's a distinction between being a striker and being a boxer.
Right. Right. Exactly. And that's what I'm saying is, that's the stuff that I don't understand the exchange between MMA
sure.
and boxing.
Yeah.
I understand the, like, oh, this is a trained athlete, and this is a trained athlete.
I think, personally, guys, I think it would be far more fascinating to put it in a mixed martial arts context.
Yes, and that's what everyone has been saying every fight that has come up.
Because you can do boxing.
Yeah.
You can do grappling.
Right.
You can do leg kicks and, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
we're not
a lot
taking
of,
your thing out. We're
right.
adding more stuff in, and you don't like that. So
right.
they're like,
right, right. But in the world of, like, legitimately being a boxer, I mean, Jake Paul, like, I don't see you in the.
That's what I'm saying.
You're not on Showtime.
I haven't. You know what I mean? Like, I
watch boxing every Friday night.
The
one
and only boxer that he's faced, and it was a Tommy Fury, right?
Yeah.
And it was a. I don't know where he is ranked wise. I don't know anything about the world of boxing, but that guy gave him a problem.
Yeah.
So if he fights a boxer in boxing, he has trouble.
Right.
And if he fights MMA fighters in boxing and they're not allowed to use any MA, I love Nate Diaz. He is one of my favorite people, not just favorite fighters, but favorite people. I just love the fact that he seems to be a real person through and through.
I think so. Yeah.
So if I see him lose to Jake Paul, I will either, and I won't lose faith in him as a fighter, but as, like, morally, I will go, like, because I don't believe that Jake Paul can legitimately beat any of these trained fighters.
Yeah.
I don't
think so.
I have not been convinced.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So ultimately, this is the one that I've been the most compelled to watch.
Right.
Because
it's Nate Diaz.
Because he's the wild card.
Right.
Even if he says, yeah, Jake, I'll take a fall in the seventh, or okay, yeah, you can, you'll get it in a decision, or yeah, we'll set up a rematch, or, right, or something like that. I don't put it past him to at some point show his dominance, much like he did in the Leon Edwards fight, where he had him beat. He could have finished him, but he's like, nah. You know what I mean?
You're
like,
right.
And so maybe he'll go bam, bam, and then in the seventh he'll go boom, and he'll go,
ooh, right.
That would be great.
You got me on that one.
Yeah, that would be something entertaining to see. But you know, when I'm seeing, like Anderson Silva lose, sure, a decision to Jake Paul,
right,
none of this is selling me on any other fights with Jake.
Well,
Paul.
That's true though, but I mean that's fair, right? Because right. It came to a very unsatisfying conclusion.
Yeah.
And then if we're basing it on the point system of like boxing, which is regulated by, you know, how many effective strikes you or, yeah, you know, punches you've thrown, their connection rate, you know, your ring mastery, like how, yeah, you've, like, then yeah, I mean you're like, okay, I'm unsatisfied with this, right?
Yeah.
Like nothing happened,
right,
except for
I watched one of my heroes get like pieced up by this fucking YouTuber.
Right. And that, my friend, is the issue. That is the issue, and nobody wants to say it. Maybe they do want to say,
yeah,
it. Is that nobody wants Jake Paul to win because they fucking hate him.
Yeah,
they think he's a dickhead.
I don't believe his messaging. Like, I don't believe when,
yeah, right,
he says, I'm just doing this for fighter rights and all this. I don't believe him.
Right.
I do believe that he wants to be a fighter.
Me too.
But
yeah,
I
do too. I think he actually does.
But I don't think he's doing it clean. I don't think he's doing it. I think it's a lot of gimmick. It reminds me a lot of pro wrestling and the bad stuff that I don't like about it, where you can't tell the difference.
Sure.
And I kind of feel like, and I also don't, just in the world of, it's not just jiu-jitsu, but it, speaking of that element, UFC is starting to do that now, where they're bringing the next fighter in after the fighter just won a fight, like,
yeah, to challenge him.
I don't,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
that,
yeah.
I don't like, there is spectacle that I like. I do like the showmanship. I do like performance.
Yeah.
I like, but I don't like cringe.
Yeah.
I don't like,
I don't get down on that either.
I don't like you saying that you're a better fighter than Nate Diaz. Like, I understand you think that you can beat him, but you have to know you are not a better fighter than, but it's selling a fight. I'm getting into semantics of it.
Right. I know, and this is like this is why
you
just
want
to avoid.
And this is why I don't like boxing.
Yeah,
yeah,
you want to avoid it altogether.
I don't like all spectacle. I want substance.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting.
I'll probably watch.
I sort of cut you deep on this one, man.
Yeah, I it really frustrates me.
I apologize.
This one in particular, because it's like I don't want to watch another guy. Either I don't want him legitimately to lose, and I truly don't think that can happen.
Yeah.
But
who knows?
Puncher's chance.
Yeah.
Payday. Diaz has nothing to prove. He can go like, yeah, fine, Jake Paul knocked me out. You want,
right,
to try it? You know, nobody's going to talk shit to him.
Right.
This is a win-win ultimately, yeah, for kind of everybody. But
right.
I think Jake Paul's trying to get to Conor. I think he's doing it through Nate. And if this is a legitimate fight, if I don't know.
Yeah.
It's already in the conversation.
Yeah.
Next one's probably going to be Paul versus McGregor. And everybody's going to watch it, and everybody's going to go, what? Jake Paul beat Conor McGregor? What? And they're both going to cash their checks, and we're,
yeah,
going to debate about it, but we will talk about it. But that's personally I just want to call it now. I don't know if this is fake or not. If it's fake, it's going to kill me. But even if it's real, we won't be able to tell.
Right.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. Oof. Sorry.
We should, and end on a positive note. I do advocate for like Fight Pass bringing like,
yes,
a lot of these athletes that maybe aren't fighting in mixed martial arts anymore, that are still fighting, that are still relevant, still good at what they do.
Yeah.
Bring them on for some grappling, man.
Yeah, especially the grappling experts.
Yes, yeah. Oh,
I would love to see once.
What,
you know,
great matches they would be.
Long, long down the road, once Charles Oliveira retires from MMA, to continue grappling would be. That would be phenomenal.
It would
to
be
watch.
Phenomenal. And they do; these guys do continue to grapple. A lot of them go to like other, you know, they either have their own gyms or they go to other, you know, academies or gyms and teach, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, teach submission wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it would be great to just keep them involved in the fight game because they're such like big names. And like, I hate the idea of like, I don't like people coming out of retirement for fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't like
to see it.
Yeah, it makes me feel bad, but it,
me too.
And like it's a weird pity.
Yeah,
and I don't mean that to sound demeaning. You know what I mean?
No. I totally agree with it.
Feels
like
scary.
I worry. I'm like, oh, did this? Like, what happened that they're coming back out of fight? You've got nothing to prove, and then the only thing that they do prove is that they just take a beating, and you know, and then everyone's like, I beat the champion from I'm like, no.
No, you didn't.
No. But grappling though, they can come out and they can put on their. They could do the work, and it can be a great match, and it'll be really...
It's really just one like, the grappling, you don't necessarily... You can get refreshers, or you can get tuned up a little bit, like, going into
it.
But it's really about stamina. So that's a doable thing of, like, you know, eat a little bit better, get some exercise, going up into the competition, and grapple a bit, throw that in there, and it's very low impact on the body. It's very, like, you can do it healthy and, like,
of course.
And have longevity in a competitive, like... I just want competitive grappling to be a league.
Yeah, it would be great. That's like, what I'm saying. But cool. this could be a catalyst for it. Yeah, I mean, or at least exist on that type of main stage.
BJ Penn, we could see BJ Penn come back. Man.
Yeah,
we could see, like, again, GSP is coming back to
Yeah.
So that is the coolest thing. I would love to see Anderson Silva continue to grapple.
Yeah.
Gilbert Burns is one of my favorite grapplers, and he's so good at striking that you barely get to see him grappling.
Right, exactly.
MMA.
Yeah.
So like it's that would be, you're absolutely right, dude. We should start a federation.
UFC, step aside. We've got this.
All spectacle. Because then you could do all spectacle. Then you could do all the shit talking stuff like that. Greg Jones would definitely be a manager.
Yeah,
he'd be in there.
Yeah. Smoking a cigar, going bald, rubbing his fat belly.
Mexican ground karate.
Yeah. That's what I said.
Yeah, I love it.
So, I guess this, leads us to our next topic.
Yeah.
Would you want to ask a black belt?
This week, we have a question from Casey. Do you remember the first time you were truly humbled on the mat?
Oh, my goodness. Casey, I remember exactly the first time I was humbled on the mat.
His eyes lit up. I don't know if you saw it.
I've told you, for those of you that train with me, you've heard the story. I know you have. And that is the first time I remember being humbled on the mat was my very first class in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Yeah, it was my very first class in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I had a buddy of mine who was training at a very, very small place in Mount Joy, Pennsylvania, and we were studying Bruce Lee's martial art, Jeet Kune Do, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I got involved in all of this from Jeet Kune Do.
Okay.
And Bruce Lee's art, as for those that are unaware, Bruce Lee saying, I'm going to take all these martial arts, and I'm going to pick the ones that work the best in these scenarios, and I'm going to apply them. And then after his passing, there were purists that were like, it should remain the same as he did, you know, the day he died. And then there was everybody else that was like, no, the whole idea was for this to evolve. And so in some contexts, and you may hear this, that they'll give Bruce Lee the credit for being the grandfather of mixed martial arts. Like, he understood that using no way is way, no limitation was his whole thing. So, but when I started, the place that was training, that was teaching Jeet Kune Do at that time, the ground component, because we worked in the four ranges of fighting, mm-hmm. right? Kicking, punching, clinch, ground. The ground component was Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And this was an entire room of white belts. There wasn't anybody in there. There was nobody that was holding a rank or anything. But had studied mostly through seminars and so forth with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and from Gracie family, and so I was like, okay, wrestling I can do, right? Like, I've wrestled people before, no big deal. Like, this will be fun.
Yeah.
And no, like everybody like tied me up in a pretzel. You know what I mean? You know,
well, yeah, grappling, I got it.
And because they were a bunch of Neanderthals, because we really didn't know what we were doing, like, it was brutal.
Right.
Like, it was you know, and I loved every minute of it, Casey. I loved every minute of it, and it was so humbling. And it was after that, it was that moment. It wasn't the striking component. It was that moment that I realized, number one, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is for me. And number two is, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And it was very humbling. And if I can expand upon this just for a moment and say that, and I have been humbled by Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu ever since.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a day that goes by that I train that I don't marvel at the just the the pure beauty of this, of the technique of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the understanding of like how to control oneself and then control somebody else.
Yeah.
You guys show that to me all the time. I love being a part of it, and it's, I find it like overwhelming and very humbling on a daily basis. Yeah. So yeah. Great question.
Nice. Yeah. Hell yeah. That was great. Yeah. Great question.
Yeah. Great question.
So I think there's all, the only thing left is to find out what's left on your turntable.
So what's on my turntable, Pat? Interesting this week because it sort of just came out of nowhere, which was really interesting. Are you familiar with the movie Juice with Omar Epps, yeah. Tupac from back in the day? Okay, so it had a soundtrack, right?
Yeah.
And it's a great soundtrack. And I love this. But there is a rapper who I've never heard of, by the way. And by the way, guys, if you guys have heard of this guy, please let me know who the fuck he is because I can't find anything on him.
Okay.
Okay, his rapper name is Sensei, and it's S-Y-N-S-E.
Okay.
All right. It took me a while to figure out, like, you know, he says it, so now I know what his name is.
Okay, yeah.
But he does, like, a tribute to the Juice soundtrack, and it's dope as hell.
Oh.
Man. It's really good.
So he does, like, he does each song from the soundtrack?
He doesn't do each song. He takes a selection of them in
was
there.
Was the Juice soundtrack just Tupac?
No. Okay. No. Sometimes the Juice soundtrack was, like, multiple artists. There was Big Daddy Kane on there. There was Naughty by Nature. Wow. There was Too Short. There's a whole, Salt and Pepa's on there. There's, Eric B. and Rakim is on there. Like it's a pretty like it's a great soundtrack.
Like it's like it's almost like a great album of like a compilation.
A great compilation album. Yeah. It's a great compilation album. But that movie, for whatever reason, he talks about it in the intro of the record. Like really influenced him. Like really connected with him in a way that made him. You know. So at any rate, he does this tribute record, and it came out in 2019, and I'd never heard it. But he raps over a lot of the beats from some of the selection of the music in that record and makes his own rhymes over it and stuff like that. And it's just a really it's a great time. It's a great record. I was really blown away by it.
Yeah. That sounds really good. Like that sounds like I love movie soundtracks. I had the Crow soundtrack growing up.
Yeah.
And that was one that like had, that introduced me to a lot of really interesting music.
Yeah.
In a cool way. Cause I loved martial arts.
And sure,
Brandon
right,
Lee
right.
Was the star of
right.
The Crow.
Rest I in love, peace.
Yeah, dude. Ugh. That was such a bummer.
Yeah, it really was. It really drug it.
It was such a good movie, yeah. and there was such a, like I understand the curse, and everybody's talking about this weird,
yeah.
But like it just sucked that somebody that was so good,
yeah.
And could have continued that cool legacy,
yeah.
Of martial arts and filmmaking and,
right.
And stuff like that, like. That bums me out.
But, it does bum me out.
But the soundtrack itself, maybe this is, it hasn't really necessarily been on my turntable, but I'll add on to yours.
Sure.
The Crow soundtrack.
Yeah.
Rage Against the Machine, Stone Temple Pilots, Nine Inch Nails, Pantera, I think Ministry's on there. There's like a couple ones that where you're like, every other song or so, you're like, damn, this is a good song. And some album exclusive. I don't think Rage Against the Machine song
gotcha.
Is
yeah.
actually on something else. So I love
gotcha.
That when they do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what's been on my turntable?
Yeah,
lately,
what's been on your turntable, Pat?
It's the Cool Running soundtrack. I know.
Starring John Candy.
Dude, I love that movie. I actually did have that soundtrack.
Did you really?
Yeah, I bought it at the same time as The Crow.
The guy at the counter is like, what the fuck's wrong with this
yeah,
guy?
I'm like, what? Like, why? All right. No, but what's been on my turntable lately? I don't think I'm going to expose anybody to this. But Sublime.
Yeah, Sublime. We've been listening to a lot of Sublime in my house lately.
Yeah, it's weird. I've been...
Another tragic tale.
Yeah.
Bummer, dude.
Dude, again,
you're killing me.
Everything's a bummer. I'm taking the... I've been complimenting myself on this, giving myself this attribute.
Yes.
A lot of people can find a silver lining. I always found the brown lining.
You're very good at it.
Find the shit in anything.
Yeah, that's perfect.
But what... Sublime is just kind of... from Florida, like being from Florida, growing up in Florida, you hear a lot of Sublime. You hear a lot of people covering
sure.
Sublime.
Yeah.
You hear a lot of people that sound like Sublime, a lot of reggae played by white guys. And it's interesting. But when you go back into some of the deeper cuts of Sublime, I
yeah.
see why people kind of worship them in a way. Because there, and the fact that they still stand up, like some of these songs,
right?
That yes, you've heard a million times are great, but the deep cuts, and probably songs that are covers of songs that I'm not even familiar with. They do tons of great covers.
Yeah,
on like 40 Ounces of Freedom is the big one that got popular after he passed away and everything. But even Robin the Hood,
yeah,
something like that, where there's so many great like gems in there.
Yeah,
punk songs mixed with like reggae, mixed with like hip hop.
Yeah,
and it never feels
and the blues
phony. And the blues. Yeah, like there's they exposed me also to a lot of things that I wouldn't probably have been openly exposed to. Like I have lived my entire life convinced that I hate the Grateful Dead. I hate the Grateful Dead.
I still hate them though.
But their covers of their songs, they're pretty good.
Yeah, but I still hate the Grateful Dead.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I'm saying is I didn't realize that I was singing along with a Grateful Dead song. So I'm like, wait, what the fuck? So they tricked me in all the best ways. I love Sublime and not just the hits. Go back, listen to Robin the Hood.
Yeah, yeah. You know what's funny though that you bring this up is that I feel like that you're referring to them as deeper cuts, but I think like every song that's not a hit is like that deeper. Like most people have not actually listened to the records.
Yeah,
listen to the records.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you,
they're really good.
There's like three or four great songs before it gets to the songs that you know from Sublime, from 40 Ounces of Freedom. And there's ones in between that you're like, damn. Yeah, Date Rape's played on the radio, but why don't you play this one?
Yeah, why isn't this song
played? Why isn't this one on there?
I question that all the time. Yeah, about every band, but yeah.
That brings up a better, a longer subject that I brought up with a buddy of mine, Andy, that I brought up earlier. Bands that have longevity, classic rock or Bond, you know, whatever it may be, like bands that have been around forever, that you're still hearing the exact same singles you heard back then.
Right.
I would like to hear more Bruce Springsteen songs. I would like to hear more.
Nothing brings me more joy just in like, because I don't really listen to the radio anymore, but I do listen to Pandora. When they actually put a new song on from a record or another song from an older record, I'm like, there's a whole fucking library, guys. Like,
The reason this whole album was popular and this artist had longevity was because they didn't just have one good song on this album.
No.
Play another one. Play something else that when they say it at the concert, half the crowd cheers.
Right.
Because expose the existing fans to those, or the existing fans of the hits to these deeper cuts, and give the real fans what they want.
Right. Yeah.
So shout out to the deeper cuts, or like you said,
really just every other song that's not
the
a hit.
Other songs.
The other songs. And I think then that wraps it up for this one, and we just have to go out in solidarity. Fuck the Grateful Dead.
That's right. Fuck those people. Those fucking hippies.